Hey everyone, Warren Hayes here once again with another AEW Dynamite review. Hello, and happy Thanksgiving to every U.S. American, as opposed to the other types of Americans, to every American pal, chum, friend, well-wisher, comrade, acquaintance out there. Hope you have a lovely day off. I hope you're enjoying it with friends, family, food, and if not, well, you know, I hope you're enjoying it in whichever way you choose to do so. I know it's a trying time of year. I know it can be a little weird for some people, and I hope you're able to find some sort of solace. And maybe this is why you're here. Maybe this is why you're here on Thanksgiving, and you know, popping, you know, my, you know, big mug on your screens here on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, or maybe in your ears on your favorite audio application, a podcast application, I should say, like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, right? Maybe that, you're looking for a little comfort on that level. So happy to oblige. Thank you for being here. And you know the drill, like subscriptions on YouTube and 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and 5-star ratings on Spotify. Those things are all tremendous things to help grow the podcast. You know, show how thankful you are for me and what I do. I'm not trying to guilt anyone. I'm not your family. What is it? Got my dog now. Listen, a little inside baseball. She's been having like a, how to put this without being extraordinarily gross. She's been having little doggy issues with her digestion. How about that? So we've mixed up her diet a little bit. We're giving her bland food. You know, that this was recommended. We're giving her a boiled chicken breast, boiled potatoes, rice, you know, and in smaller quantities, right? Whereas previously she was used to just having, you know, a bowl and filling it up all day and going in and eating whenever she wants. Now you heard her bark, I'm sure. If not, I'm sounding completely insane right now, but I'm sure you heard her bark in the background. So she's probably at her bowl standing in front of him and saying, "Hey, feed me." Well, we just fed her. We're just being careful. And, you know, progress report is that her stools, I still think that's great, her stools are looking better, for what it's worth. I'm sure you're all, hopefully you're not enjoying food as you're listening to this right now. Yes, I know. Like, honestly, she's fine. She's just right. She's just being a baby. She's like, "Hey, come feed me." You know, that's the husky in her. You know, huskies talk. They express themselves very loudly like this. So that's what she's doing right now. Oh, there. Well, this might punctuate the broadcast. As it stands right now, you know, I'm sort of maybe choosing to let her bark. It'll get out of her system and we'll move on. So, hey, Dynamite. Should we talk about that? Dynamite that happened on November 22nd, 2023. The big Thanksgiving Eve show over at the Wintrust Arena in Chicago, Illinois. We got, let me see here. Why did this truncate? Don't you love it when I use these lovely words like truncating? 4,853 people, tickets were distributed, I should say, in the Wintrust Arena in Chicago. They struggled to get to this number. When I say they, I mean, of course, AEW, but they did struggle to get to this to this quantity. Lots of bogos and whatnot, promotional tactics all over the place. So, you know, this was not an easy win. I mean, we were doing worse than this. 4,800, not bad, but not great either. I mean, we're talking the Wintrust Arena. We're talking Chicago. which was essentially, you know, home base for AEW, right? You know, you can talk about Jacksonville all you want, but Chicago embraced AEW early on in the process, and it's always been a big time place for them to run big time shows. And effectively speaking, this is the lowest attendance that they've had. I should say, lowest number of tickets distributed that they've had. All of this, of course, according to WrestleTix, since the onset of the company, since they started coming to the Wintrust Arena. First time they came here was in 2021, November 24th, Thanksgiving Eve once again. That was the first time they came here. 7,068 tickets distributed. Came back in 2022 in February, 5,446. Went back up for the Thanksgiving Eve show in 2022 on November 23rd, 6,060. Then they returned earlier this year in June for a Dynamite, 6,291. Now we didn't even break 5,000 on this one. I really don't know what to tell you in regards to attendance. Look, we know attendance. It's a regular topic here on the review. We know attendance is not great. Excuse me. We know attendance is not great. That it's a true point of contention. You know. Like I'm saying 4,853, not bad, but not bad, always in the context of where AEW is right now with their live attendances, which are not fantastic. And we can't be necessarily patting ourselves on the back here either. This is the lowest number of tickets they've distributed in the Wintrust Arena in their history there. And, you know, there's a real deal history. We're going to point to all sorts of problems. I mean, in June, 6,281. Couldn't even break 5,000 here. I don't know, man. And this one, like I said, Chicago was their home base. Chicago was like, you know, they'd run there and confidently would sell tons of tickets, great attendances, hot crowds. But hey, you tell me that, you know, people like us are the problem. The wrestling fans are the problem. Right? Anyway. Food for thought. Of course, this last night's Dynamite was the opening salvo of the Continental Classic, which, look, in a lot of circles that I hang out in and listening to a lot of discussions, you know, there's a lot of people who are very low on this for multiple reasons. One of them being, it feels slapdash. I still feel it. And I'm kind of with it. I kind of feel like it's a little slapdash. Feel like it's Tony Khan made it come across like he's throwing us hardcore wrestling fans a bone by giving us a work rate based tournament, you know? No outside interference. You want outside interference? That's the least of our problems. That's the least of our concerns, Tony, but thank you. So it does feel a little, it feels hastily put together. And one of the things that I wanted, and I talked about this multiple times on the review last week on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show proper, I wanted the full field to be announced so that we could get into predictions, we could get into previews, we could get into all this stuff, and we got nothing. We got the live stream yesterday afternoon, yesterday being Wednesday, the 22nd, in the afternoon at 1 p.m., we had like a preview, a YouTube video introducing all the, you know, all the contenders. I'm like, okay, so yes, we got the field before Dynamite started, but it would have been nice to have it beforehand. Would have been nice to do what we usually do when it's time for the G1, for instance, and sort of break this down and see, talk about possibilities. And now, it's like, okay, I mean, it's cool, it's fine, but it's not great, and it could have been greater. It could have been a lot better, you know? But the point I was making is, despite this, I am still looking forward to this tournament. I can't say it enough. I've been wanting AEW to do a round robin probably since the day was conceived. I hope they do their own like big time tournament, G1 style. Now we're getting it. I think the field is great. I think it's compelling. So, you know, we will be in, you know, it will be possible. We'll be in a mood to talk about it as things progress and so on and so forth. But, you know, as it stands, it's like it feels hastily put together again. But, I mean, we've got all these matches to look forward to right into World's End. So, I cannot poo-poo this, hand wave it like a lot of people are doing. You know, calling it the Dollar Store G1. Sure, you know. But I don't want to be in bad faith here. Not in this circumstance here. Because this is something I really wanted. I wanted a North American G1. And I'm hoping from this point forward, Tony is giving it all sorts of TLC. And it feels like he's giving it a lot of tender loving care. Because we've got graphics, you know, with the standings appearing multiple times, showing the updates for points scoring after every match. And then, commentary reminding us, you know, on Collision, Blue League. And I'm like, okay, it might have been hastily put together. It may be a little slapdash, but it feels like we're going to take this seriously at the very least. That we're going to try and make something out of this tournament. And so, look, maybe I'll be eating my words, on December 30th when we're looking back at the Continental Classic, but I hope not. I'm legitimately hoping that this tournament goes well, and I'm willing to give it the chance, despite the context, despite Tony putting this out in a seemingly combative mode, seemingly like he's throwing us a bone and just being, all right, here you go, enjoy, you know, kind of thing. Despite it all, I'm still looking forward to the thing, and I want to give it a fair shake. And we're going to talk about the matches and so on and so forth, but just to break it down one last time, make sure we're all on the same level here, because we got, you know, everything was laid out very clearly. Like even in the, fucking announcement stream or whatever they called it, the field announcement. Even there, they were trying to explain what the prize was going to be. This Triple Crown nonsense. Well, it's not nonsense, but they were trying to explain the Triple Crown. And I was scratching my head. I was like, wait, we're all over the fucking place. Anyway, I think I understand now. I think. It's a round robin tournament, meaning, just in case, you know, I noticed on, you know, on the Mr. Warren Hayshel live stream this week, you know, some people just didn't know what a round robin was. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, a round robin means that, you know, that there's a round robin tournament means that there's two leagues of wrestlers, and every wrestler will fight every other wrestler in the block once. When you win a match, you get 3 points. In this case here, as opposed to the G1, you get 3 points here. It's European League style, soccer style scoring. 0 points for a loss, 1 point for a draw. Everyone is banned from ringside, of course. This was Tony's big talking point, right? You don't want outside interference, Tony. There's, like I said, we're there's a lot of things, there's things that we're more concerned about than outside interference at this point. And the winner gets the of the Continental Classic will become the first Triple Crown champion recognized by All Elite Wrestling. The Triple Crown, from what I understand, is going to be comprised of three different championship belts, two of which are currently being held by Eddie Kingston, right? Ring of Honor World Championship, the Strong Openweight Championship, and a new AEW Continental Championship, which they had there, right? Like they had it, they had the Continental Championship belt in a bag, right? Or with a little velveteen kind of fucking drape over it, right? During the announcement stream. And I'm like, oh shit, let's take a look at this belt, you know? You know, I'm not as big a belt geek as a lot of people are, but I do like a nicely designed title belt. So I'm always excited to see the designs, right? But I'm not like gonna pour over it and be like, well, you know, if you look at this and, you know, that's fine, to each their own. But they never unveiled it. Oh, maybe they're saving it for the show. Well, they bring the fucking belts ringside, right? They, during the tournament matches at ringside, you have the fucking belts. You have the Strong title, you have the Ring of Honor title, and then you have the Continental title, and the Continental title is veiled the entire time. I am willing to put down 20 Canadian rubber bucks that is not the Continental Championship. That in my theory, that all of this is very slapdash and hastily put together. The title's not ready yet. It hasn't been designed. It hasn't been, or at the very least, fabricated, right? It hasn't been manufactured. Hasn't been, you know, physically brought into the world. So whatever's under, I'm willing to bet 20 bucks that it's an AEW title that's under there. An AEW world title. Because are you shitting me? Are you telling me that Tony Khan would not reveal a title? Would not unveil a title, I should say. If he had the chance. I'm convinced. 100% convinced. Anyway, a little sidebar there, but those are the rules. That's what we're going to be working with. Blue League, Gold League. I've been calling them blocks. So, I'll change my vernacular here. I'll do my best. Bear with me. So we have our two... we have our field here, two leagues, the Blue League, made up of Brian Danielson, Andrade El Idolo, Brody King, Claudio Castagnoli, Daniel Garcia, and Eddie Kingston, whereas the Gold League is comprised of John Moxley, Swerve Strickland, Roosh, Mark Briscoe, Jay Lethal, and Jay White. When I saw them revealed and I posted it on the Blue Sky, you want to join me on Blue Sky, you're more than welcome. Come and find me there. I posted this on Blue Sky. I was like, if I look at this, and for me, the Blue League is the block. That's the one that I find has the most interesting combinations of matches. That has the guys that I think will overperform. That was my call. And with what happened in the Gold League last night, I would say my finely honed instincts serve me right once again. Not that it was a bad showing debut of the Continental Classic, but it was fine, which is weird because maybe that's not how you want things to start. You don't want things to be fine. You want things to be exciting. You want to do something surprising. Look, Gedo in the G1... systematically, maybe not systematically, but there's always an upset on night one. There's always one match, one guy who you're like, well, you know, oh, Hiroshi Tanahashi's going over here. Oh, Kazuchika Okada's going over here. It's a, you know, he's fighting, you know, Master Wato. He's fighting Aaron Henare. You know, of course they're going over on the, but then, no. Whoop. I was fully expecting Mark Briscoe to win his match last night. You know, especially how things were going forward. I was like, oh shit, Okay. Yeah, like the favorites. Well, look, was Roosh or Jay White the favorite? I think that was a 50-50, right? But, you know, I think everyone assumed that Swerve was going to be the favorite to defeat Jay Lethal, right? I think that that was pretty clear. I think, so, you know, Jay White winning, well, it makes sense. It makes sense because Jay White has been super protected in AEW, right? Might not have had the greatest of pushes, the greatest of, you know, beginnings in the company, right? But he's, you know, he did suffer his first loss at Full Gear last weekend. So I'm like, okay, Jay White, we're continuing, still positioning him as a top guy, you know, as a force to be reckoned with at the very least. That's cool. And it's Jay White. It's fine. We should do that. But so, but, you know, a bit of a a safe decision, right? I think it was safe. Swerve winning, safe. Also the right decision, don't get me wrong, but safe. So we get to the main event. I'm like, okay, something has to happen here, right? Briscoe's going to win. He's going to upset John Moxley. And I would absolutely have seen a scenario where, you know, the guys are sitting down talking about it and you know, and Tony coming up, let's say, to Moxley and says, Mox, you're going to have to job to, you're going to do the J-O-B to Mark Briscoe. And I can absolutely, Mox going, oh, no problem, boss man. That's fine. You know what I mean? Again, I don't think this is one where, you know, someone pulled out a that's not going to work for me brother. I think this is, I think it makes, you could absolutely see John Moxley saying, yeah, absolutely, I'll put Mark Briscoe over. And that would have, look at the conversations that would have created today, or at least, you know, in the next couple of days, because today is a holiday. Not a lot of people post during the holidays. I don't know if you know this. But, it, you know, it would have made for some really interesting conversation. And immediately the Gold League becomes a little more interesting, where you're like, oh, shit. All right, let's see how this goes. So, you know, I guess Tony Khan decided to forego Gato's influence in round robin matches and just went straight to Mox on this one. So I get, look, I don't have an issue with Mox winning, and I think Mox needs to be the final boss of this block, right? Of the Gold League. So it makes, like, it's not that it doesn't make sense. What I'm saying is that I feel like, especially since I'm giving some spoilers here from the rest of the review, especially since the two previous matches, the two previous Gold League matches were good, but nothing to blow your mind. You know, Swerve and Lethal was good, you know, but not great, but a good little wrestling match. Jay White and Roosh was fine, you know. All right, like it felt like a Roosh match with a Jay White finish, if that makes sense. Like Roosh didn't, you know, anyway, we'll get to that in a second. So, especially when you consider how the first two matches went, how, you know, good but uninspired, you know, despite that, you know, considering that, I feel like we should have gone really fucking strong with the finish, with the main event, and give Briscoe the win. And people were up on their feet for the near falls. They were up on their feet, going, "Holy shit!" They were buying into it. I'm like, "Are we going to see an upset?" And that would have given so much gasoline onto this fire. People would be like, "Oh shit!" And it just makes things interesting. It make from out the gate, the, you know, the odds-on favorite, which is John Moxley. Let's not be stupid here. The odds-on favorite ate a loss. I mean, then you can do the whole, you know, runs through the entire field after. It doesn't matter, but at least it makes things interesting out the gate. Because if you're going to have matches which are good but not great, you know, let me say that again. the Continental Classic moving forward cannot just rely on good matches. Like, not in this first year, not if you want people to make to get emotionally attached to this. If you want it to come back, if we want it to shine and really be this greatest wrestling tournament that, you know, Danielson and Tony have been promising us. We cannot just abide by good matches. You know, a G1, the modern G1s, recent G1s will have good matches in the undercard, right? Sometimes there'll be a stinker or two, depending on, you know, whether, you know, whoever of the House of Torture is involved or Kenta or whoever, you know. There'll be a couple of stinkers. But then, you know, your expectation is that once we start heading to the top two matches of the evening, this is going to start tearing the house down. And usually it does, right? That's the expectation at this point. Here we only have expectations to make this great. And if to want and make sure that this is great. And the wrestlers seem motivated to do it. Everyone who's talked about it seems hype about it. Well, fucking deliver big time matches. Let's go for the four and a quarter, four and a half matches. Give us some 5-star matches on TV. You know, sort of what AEW used to be. Because that's it. Like, if we're just going to content ourselves with regular TV matches, well, it's not going to feel special. And then people are going to start calling it the G1, you know, the Dollar Store G1. And maybe they won't be wrong at this point. I'm holding off. I want this first tournament to blow through. I don't want to sit here with any bad faith intentions. And whatever what I'm feeling about AEW right now, and God knows, you know, last night was again another expression of how much this company has lost the plot, in my opinion. Despite all of that, I still, you know, I'm focused on this tournament being something interesting. I want this tournament to be something interesting. So let's make something interesting, folks. Give us some big time matches, not just stuff. You know, it's not just a meaningless Dynamite match or a meaningless Collision match, or these should all have stakes. They should all feel important. And, you know, you as a promoter or as a pro wrestler can tell us, this tournament means the world to me. Unless you're leaving it all in the ring, I'm not buying it. You know, it's easy to say. Now make me live it. Bring me on board your journey, if anything, to make this a great tournament. I'll jump on. I'll be there right there with you. So, as it stands right now, our standings are pretty simple. Like, it's going to be pretty easy peasy until we get really 2 weeks in. Then I think we can start drawing portraits of what's going to happen and then get into predictions. Because, you know, it's not we're not doing 10, you know, 10 matches here per person. Every person gets 5 matches ultimately. So it's not like a, you know, it's not an 8-man field. It's not a 10-man. It's not an 8-man block. It's not a 10-man block. You know, this is going to, the points are going to be meaningful very soon. So I think as soon as next week, we'll be able to get a glimpse at what's going on, who's going to be in and out and whatnot. But right now, Jon Moxley, as we mentioned, Jon Moxley, Swerve, Strickland, and Jay White all have 3 points. I'm assuming that they'll probably do the eliminator, the tiebreaker will be similar to the G1, whereas if there's a tie, whoever holds the win over the other will break the tie. So let's say by some happenstance, Jon Moxley and Mark Briscoe make it to the end. And it boils down to points. You know, they're tied at points. Well, Jon Moxley will move forward as opposed to, because he defeated Mark Briscoe. Now, from what I understand, there will be league finals before going to the tournament finals. So I guess top two scorers are going to advance to the playoffs, essentially. Let's call them what they are. Or the finals, the league finals. And then onto the main event at, well, not the main event, but the finals at World's End. But let's get more into this card here. I think we've covered everything continental. I mean, it already feels good to, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm talking about points and I'm talking about playoffs and I'm like, this is good. This is good, familiar, you know, exciting territory, you know. So the first match of the evening was Swerve Strickland defeating Jay Lethal. Hangman Page nowhere to be found. I'm okay selling the beating. Look. Nonetheless, I would have liked to have Page in the Continental Classic in the same league as Swerve. And I think, once again, that's an instant sell for the tournament where you're looking at the kind of like Danielson and Claudio being in the same league, right? Being in the blue league. I'm like, ooh, some BCC action here that we don't get to see very often. Like, that kind of shit is fun. And I think Swerve versus Page in one league would have been great. Would have sold itself. People would have gotten anticipated for it. You know, they'd be like, oh, on, you know, this edition of Dynamite, that's the big Swerve Page block match, league match. And then you can have Page get a win there. You know, Page can just have a nice nifty little win. But look. Man, I'm completely off base, and that, you know, once we get hindsight in 20, you know, we're like, yeah, this all makes perfect sense, right? Because right now, like, who do I think should win? You know, that's a big question. Like, who? And right now, like I said, Moxley has to be the final boss of Gold League, but Swerve, man, you know, Swerve has to be a guy in this tournament. I'd give it to Swerve personally. You know, capitalize off of everything that Swerve has built over the past 2 months. Capitalize on it. Go hard. That's how you strike that, you know, the proverbial rocket. That's what it's, if he wins this, the proverbial strapped on rocket, that's, there you go. Yeah, but we were talking about the match. Yes, the Jay Lethal Swerve Strickland match. So yeah, Lethal is in control early on. You know, he takes advantage of Swerve, who's selling injuries from the Texas Death Match, of course, and that's fine. They fight on the floor. There's a superplex by Swerve, and the elbow drop by Lethal, but it doesn't finish the job. And Swerve intercepts the Lethal injection, and lands the Swerve Stomp for the win. So 3 points for Swerve. I thought it was a good match, if unspectacular. Again, I think the level of match should be elevated here. Make it feel special. Make the matches come across as special, and the tournament will feel special, and then people will want to get invested into it more. If it's more of the same, you know, if it's more of the same as to what we get every week on Dynamite, it's just going to be, well, okay, well, all right then. You know what? I've talked about it enough. Let's keep this ball rolling. Orange Cassidy, Hook, and Katsuyori Shibata are backstage. They're being interviewed. Wheeler Yuta comes in to congratulate Cassidy, but he also says he hasn't forgotten Shibata for taking his Ring of Honor Pure title. And he tells him he wants his title back. I thought we were setting something up with Hook. And now we're doing something with Shibata. I guess they're setting this up for the last pay-per-view of the year. What is it? Is it Death Before Dishonor? No, it's Final Battle, right? It's Final Battle. That's coming up in a couple of weeks. So I guess they're setting, but yeah, but you see how unfocused,
And see, everyone says, give us more stories, more stories. Oh, we're going to tell stories. We're going to tell. And the stories all go like this. And there's no continuity. They hired people to do continuity. And here we go. We have Wheeler Yuta coming out of nowhere and not even addressing Hook. Not even like giving him a cross look sideways. It's just like, hey, Shibata. I'm like, all right, well, never mind then. Like, you know, I was getting into the Wheeler Hook stuff. You know, Yuta, you know, he shoulders Hook after the match at Full Gear, you know. And you know, Hook is like, oh, let's go. You know, and then they start a little scrap. They quickly get pulled apart. I'm like, okay, this is kind of juicy. I like this. Give me some shit. Give me some shit I can sink my teeth into on this undercard, right? That's, you can't complain that. This is, you tell stories, and then the stories all get fucking convoluted and you don't know what's going on anymore and you thought you understood, and then you think you're following the story, then the next thing you know, Excalibur's telling you how the devil has been attacking everyone who has ever tried to help MJF, when that has only happened once. And that's what I mean. Like, we want to tell stories, but we're not good at it because it's fucking pro wrestling. You don't keep it fucking simple. Two guys or gals just want to fight each other for the winner's purse. That's all. And titles. That's all. MJF and Adam Cole come out together. Max is coming out with a cane because he did legitimately hurt his hip, from what I understand, off of the top rope elbow at Full Gear onto the floor. And Adam Cole is there on crushes. Adam Cole comes out of the heel side. I don't even know if that matters in AEW anymore, honestly, though. Max has Cole sit in a chair in the ring, and they get, you know, they start doing the microphone, and they cut very standard, very bog average promos. You know, both of them, Max puts over White as one of the best wrestlers in the world, puts himself over, which, it's not the content in about itself, it's not the, you know, put yourself over, you're the champion, of course, you know, it all felt very average, very ordinary, and Cole says he's going to work his way back. Okay. All right. And it's kind of heatless, and I don't know. You know, Max is doing his rock sing-alongs, and anyway, we cut back to the devil, though, who appears on the light. The lights go out in the building, and then the devil appears on screen, and now he giggles, goes like through a voice modulator, right? You know that weird pitch that voice modulators create.
You know when you talk kind of like this,
and I'm not doing it right because I don't, you know, I have a normal human voice. So that's still going, and you know the devil has control of, you know, all the electricity in the building, you know. Samoa Joe makes his entrance, and he requests his world title match. MJF denies it. Adam Cole cuts in and says, "Hey, that's the old Max talking. Now you need to be a man of your word." And so Max agrees. Then he says he wouldn't be the first Ring of Honor legend he's beaten in Chicago twice. I'll allow it. Sure. Take all the CM Punk shots you want. I'm fine with this. He offers up to Joe to get the match done right here, right now. But Joe doesn't want any excuses from Max. So he says no, because you're going to say, oh, I just came off a pay-per-view and I'm hurt and I have a cane. And he says, you're my property now. Joe says this. He says, you're my property now, so I'm going to be protecting you from here on in because I want you in, you know, tip-top shape. Look, I don't know what to tell you. You know what? But this was an extremely, and most of you are probably really sick of hearing this, but it's nonetheless an observation that I have to lay upon your feet here. This was a very WWE promo segment. There's no two ways to go about it. You know, you have The baby face, getting the crowd into it. They're cutting very standard, very bog average promos. And then there's a sports entertainment event with the devil. And then Joe comes. We'll do the match right here, right now. This is all 2 decades of WWE. Like, again, we're running off, the thought process that we're running off the hardcores. And now we're trying to keep the hardcores by throwing them the classic, but in the meantime, it's like, who are you attracting with this? Again, like, I can't stress this enough. We talked about it on Tuesday, and here we are again. Who are you attracting with this? Are you attracting, are you bringing in sports entertainment fans? Because, ratings aren't great. We struggled to get, over 4,000 people in the Wind Trust. Worked hard for it when this technically should be a layup in Chicago, right? We're trying to appeal to a crowd who doesn't like you. Because they've got their thing. They've got their little nest of sports entertainment, and they're happy with it. They're getting excited that Randy Orton's coming back. There we go. That's an entirely different crowd from the one you're catering to, but yet these are the people you want. And they're not going to tune in. They're not going to come in. On Saturday, they're going to be watching the fucking Survivor Series and not your 3 hours of AEW programming that you're pulling for us. I don't know. It mystifies me. Anyway, the big takeaway here, however, is that we're getting Joe versus Max at World's End on December 30th. And I'm going to tell you, because, this brochacho devil shit, it's a story. It's a stagnant story. Nothing is happening. We're in the exact same place we were back in August with this. Max has to lose the title at World. I'm going to scream this at the top of my lungs at every occasion that I have to scream about it, just to make sure that everyone gets to see what I see here. But Max has to lose the title in his hometown because the devil / Adam Cole / whoever, devil Jack Perry, now people are saying it's Jack Perry, whoever the fucking devil is, has to cost him the title because we need a big story bump in this nonsense. And there's none. Nothing's happening. And world champion Samoa Joe, A-okay with that. Then we had Hook, Katsuyori Shibata, and Orange Cassidy defeating the JAS castoffs. This was fun. Like karma. Danhausen returned to a big raucous reaction from the crowd. This was fine. It was mostly fun. Hook here playing Ricky Morton. And I've been zeroing in more and more on Hook as he's been thrown into more and more matches, obviously, and things that, on TV and on pay-per-view and whatnot. And, we recently talked about how much he's improved. And here we're doing stuff with Hook that a couple of months ago we were not doing. We're putting him in the babyface in peril situation in these matches. And he's eating the offense. He's selling. He's building up to the big hot tag. And that's something that he wasn't doing until recently. So good. Again, eventually Hook is going to become a full package that's going to be exciting to watch. We're not unlike Julia Hart. We're watching these guys grow right in front of our eyes. Not unlike the Acclaimed, Bowens. It's not unlike that, but Bowens, maybe a bad comp because Bowens didn't come in to AEW as a literal rookie.
Anyway, but look, you know what I mean. For some reason, Danhausen has the purple hat. The Jake Hager purple hat, and that, of course. Look, a very sports entertaining match. But forgivable, because you know what you're getting yourself into if Danhausen is around and Orange Cassidy, even though he is more serious now, it's still his gimmick, you know. So you know what you're getting yourself into. Yeah. Just, again, sports entertaining. I'm not nitpicking it. I'm just pointing it out. Let's move on. Renee Paquette is with Adam Cole backstage. Roderick Strong arrives, and I am completely zoned out. My brain shuts off. I'm like, all right, no attention was paid. I think Roderick Strong is sad because Adam Cole told him to hit the bricks or something. Right? Who cares? Well, someone cares, not me. That's the point I was trying to make here. You can care. You can care if you want to. You can leave your friends behind, because if they don't care, and if we don't care, well, they're no friends of mine. I don't know. I was trying to do something with the safety dance. How does that go? We can dance if we want to. We can leave our friends behind, because your friends don't dance. And if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. So if your friends don't care. But your friends don't care. But your friends do care. And if they do care, well, they're no friends of mine. There you go. That's what I should have said. Care about that. Anyway. The patriarchy. And you see, this is the split personality that AEW has, right? Because you get all the, you know, the fucking nonsense earlier. Well, it's not fucking nonsense. It's mostly boring and derivative. But then you get Christian Cage coming into the ring. Christian Cage, who is he has already been a godsend. Hang on. He's already been a delicious flavor of ice cream over the past couple of months now. Now he feels like a godsend. Now it's like, how can we even subsist without him moving forward, right? Anyway, they all come in. He says, you know, that, you know, a true champion is gracious in victory and humble in defeat. And we all know this past Saturday, you know, things didn't work out the way he had expected, but he didn't lose that match. Then he turns to Nick Wayne and he says, Nick Wayne didn't lose that match. Then he turns to Luchasaurus and he says, Luchasaurus lost that match. And then how do we get rid of this stench of defeat? Well, we're going to rechristen you. I'm going to rechristen you in my image. Christ, he is so good. And it's the delivery, everything about this guy is tremendous. So he tells Luchasaurus to take a knee. And Luchasaurus is like, you know, he's proud. He's like, man, I don't want to do this. You know, I don't want to. And he's like, motherfucker. He didn't say motherfucker, but Christian Cage is like, motherfucker, take a knee. You know, and eventually, you know, Luchasaurus does. And he says, you know, the name Luchasaurus equates to being a loser. Now I'm going to give you a name that will be strong, right? That will be powerful. You're going to be my finisher. So your name moving forward is going to be Killswitch, which frankly, at this point, much better name than Luchasaurus. And here's where my thought process is going, because during this promo, Christian Cage, you know, says, do what you're told. A little later, he says this to Luchasaurus/Killswitch. He says, do what you're told, or I'll have you unmasked so everyone can see your ugly face, right? With a name like Killswitch, it becomes suddenly much more palpable to remove the dinosaur mask, right? And be like, yeah, my name is Killswitch now. We don't need the dino stuff anymore, because I'm not a literal dinosaur anymore. I'm a guy, and my name is... So I don't hate this, and I think it has long-term repercussions. It can have... not long-term repercussions. It has a... It opens the door to a good finale, for a turn. A turn which, at this point, the seeds for Luchasaurus at some point... Killswitch, I guess that's how we should call him now...
a turn that is inevitable at this point, because we've seen Luchasaurus try to stand up to Christian Cage before, and he's done it again today. At some point, he's gonna lose his shit. He's going, hey, you know what? I'm done with this. Oi, we're good. Let's hit the bricks. So there you go. So Luchasaurus now kill switch, I guess. And he turns to Nick Wayne and he says, Nick Wayne, I don't need to change your name. You're like the son I never had. You're the son I always wanted, is what he said. And he's holding him, and I'm like, and it's so good. And it's so good. And he says, so we're not changing your name. We're just going to call you the Prodigy. You're my golden boy, the Prodigy, Nick Wayne. Then, for some reason, Shayna Wayne, Nick's mother, is in Gorilla. For some reason. And she trots down the aisle. And she's like, she comes in and she's like, what's going on? And Christian Cage wants nothing of this, right? He wants nothing of this. And he calls her a terrible mother. And says, maybe you love Nick unconditionally, but that's not good enough. You can't provide for him on $40,000 a year as a waitress. That's embarrassing, he says. He says he's a legend, a champion. He can give Nick everything in the world. And it's a good thing her husband's dead. And it just continues and continues. And he says, you know, Nick Wayne eventually would have... It's a good thing Nick Wayne is dead. Buddy Wayne is dead, because Nick would have seen his father was a schlub and he would have come to me anyway. Would have just disowned his father. At least he's not there to see it, right? And he says, you know, it's a shame you didn't play your cards right. This could have been different. Now I want you to get the hell out of my ring. There's a shoving incident in which... Well, look. Luchasaurus kill switch gets between... Christian Cage and Shayna, and she, you know, Luchasaurus is, his conscience is keeping him from, like, look, she's the mother, she's not a pro wrestler, what are we doing here? So there's a shoving match that ensues, and Christian shoves Luchasaurus, who tumbles back onto Shayna, who passes out. Like, listen, I've been shoved around a couple of times in my life. Are any of you really shocked? And she falls to the floor. She falls to the mat and she's like dead, right? She's like, you know, she's selling like she ate a fucking, you know, she's selling like she, you know, I was going to say like she ate a Canadian Destroyer, but people who eat Canadian Destroyers don't even sell that much. You know, she's like she ate a, you know, a Tiger Driver 91. And so or a burning hammer. It looks like she was hit with a fucking burning hammer. And then, so then what does Christian do? He tells Nick to go get some chairs so they can concerto her. And I'm like, wow, this is escalating. Holy shit. And he insists, he being Christian, insists that Killswitch do the thing. And then Adam Copeland's music hits, and he comes in for the save, and even ends up concertoing Nick Wayne to the bemused eyes of Shayna, who has regained consciousness and is cowering off in a corner, and she's like, "What are you doing?" You know, kind of thing. So maybe that'll turn on Adam Copeland and Christian Cage, of course, being the absolute dog shit coward that he is, did not run in to try and save Nick from this. He stayed at the top of the ramp with Killswitch, right? Because we saw it at the pay-per-view. He's a fucking coward. He's bullshit. Look, everything here worked perfectly. This was probably my favorite moment of the entire show. Great shit. I'm invested in it. I think it's good. And, you know, ultimately, Copeland and Christian is not necessarily a match I want, but the way they're building it, I'm like, okay, let's see what they can do. Let's see what can happen here. Because the fact that they're going down the, you know, the route of you will never, you know, they're not touching each other until the pay-per-view, at least. That's what I'm hoping they do. And then at the pay-per-view, I hope Christian does the 7-minute stall. I hope he does the Larry Zbysko 7-minute stall. I hope most of the match is Christian just running the fuck away from Edge. Copeland, excuse me. Anyway, let's keep this rolling. I'm going a little long. 2.0, surprise, surprise. 2.0 are backstage with Jake Hager and Anna Jay, and everyone's angry, and Anna Jay's angry that the boys are not paying attention to her, and Angelo Parker has a crush on Ruby Soho. And Jay White defeated Roosh in another Gold League match. This was fine. I mentioned this when we were talking about the Continental Classic, and let's just bring this full circle here. This was a Roosh match where Roosh is just doing all the shit he wants, no selling whatever he wants, but then we get the Jay White finish where it's like out of nowhere, low blow, and the Blade Runner. So I don't feel like we had a really cohesive match, right? And I know a lot of people are super high on Roosh, and I think I've told you all, keep this guy at arm's length. Keep him at arm's length. He's talented. Don't get me wrong. He's super charismatic. There's a lot of qualities to Roosh. But what I saw there was a Roosh match. And not necessarily a good thing. You know, where the guy is just like... Roosh likes to portray himself as a Brock Lesnar type. Where it's like, I'm untouchable. I can't be beaten. You know, I'm a savage. That's his thing. And sometimes it doesn't translate into compelling, fun matches. Depends on who his opponent is. Depends on what the stakes are. Depends on how much money's involved, I guess. So, essentially here, Jay White ate shit until Jay White got the low blow. And don't get me wrong, it's not a bad story to say where the heel is outclassed by the babyface and the babyface gets screwed out of a win. It's a tale as old as time. But you're going to tell me Roosh didn't run roughshod and did whatever the fuck he wanted? Good, you know, solid exchanges, good chops. But I mean, I feel we got one guy's match and another guy's finish, if that makes sense. And then we just stitched it together. And I don't know. It didn't do it to me. It didn't do it for me, I should say. Then we got the Toni Storm bullshit doing an awards, you know, handing out an award thing. And I thought it was unbelievably cringe and it made me feel uncomfortable. And I it's like a bad Saturday Night Live skit. And I'm sorry, I have no use for this. I have no use for this. You know, 1 year ago at Full Gear 2022, Toni Storm and Jamie Hayter tore the fucking house down. And you have Toni Storm, one of the best women wrestlers in North America operating today, who's sticking shit down her trunks and throwing shoes. Doing all this fucking nonsense to very mid reactions, because look, I'm not getting into it. I'm just going to rehash some stuff. Ruby Soho. No, I'm sorry. Sky Blue defeated Anna Jay and Ruby Soho. So we're still pushing Sky Blue, huh? You know, she interrupted Toni Storm. She interrupted timeless Toni Storm during her acceptance speech, and Toni was like, and I shuddered at the thought of timeless Toni Storm and Sky Blue having a match. Look, this match here, this three-way, it wasn't good. And for some reason, we're still pushing Sky Blue. She stomped on her hat because she basically told
because she basically told Cora Jade, hey, you can have the gimmick now. You can be Avril Lavigne. You want to bring back the skateboard, Cora? You can do it now. Wardlow is backstage with Renee Paquette, and then he's talking about MJF again. And AR Fox comes in and says, "Stop blaming everyone for your problems, like I used to do with Darby." And then Wardlow headbutts him. And then the main event. We already talked about it. John Moxley versus Mark Briscoe. I talked about it earlier. I don't know what to add other than, like, this was very good. I really enjoyed this match. I thought the final stretch was super hot. And the crowd was into it too, with the near falls and Briscoe kicking out of the Death Rider. Everyone lost their shit. And from that point on, like I said earlier, I thought we were getting the upset. I was like, let's fucking go. This is cool. And if there's a guy that everyone on planet Earth would be like, yeah, you know what? This is fine. There's a guy that winning the entire thing that everyone would agree on. It's Mark Briscoe for multiple reasons. For his history, for the efforts that he put into this business, to finally getting recognized and being signed to a major national promotion, to the loss of his brother. And so, you know, it's like there's so much you could glean out of this. The upset would have just sent some shockwaves. Like, it would have been, you know, showing us that the Continental Classic Christ, you know, you can catch someone off on a bad night. You know, Mox had, oh, he was just off that night and Mark Briscoe was the better man, but the better man now has 3 points and Mox is at zero. Not a good start. You know, all these great fucking easy to tell stories that then created, you know, anticipation and promotion. As you move forward, Strickland and Paige being in the same block. You know what I mean? The match was fine, but again, nothing stood out in Gold League tonight. As I said, I feel Blue League is the better of the two. I think that's the one that has the potential to really be contain the barn burners. I think it's that one that has all of the potential. That's the one I'm most excited to see how it all plays out. Between the two, if I have to pick, I'll pick Blue. There you go. That's a Dynamite. A middling episode. A lot of shit I don't like. A lot of competent wrestling nonetheless. But I can't sit here and tell you this was a good episode. I can't tell you it was a bad one. It's just, there's, you know, stuff that happened, and a lot of stuff that happened is in ways that I feel it goes against what the company was built on, what it should be doing. This is where we're at right now. I'm less than more excited for this edition of Dynamite that we saw, but nonetheless intrigued by the Continental Classic. I'm looking forward to see how it plays out, but I'm looking forward to getting excited for it. I'm looking forward to getting excited for how it's going to shake out. So just give it a couple of more weeks, see how these matches start turning out. There you go. Leave a like on this video if you're watching this on YouTube. 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. 5-star ratings on Spotify. I will be back Sunday with the Collision review. Going to talk more Continental Classic there. See that? See? We're going to get into this group. It's going to be a good time. I'm excited for it. And programming note, the Mr. Warren Hayes Show will not be recorded live on Tuesday this week. It will be recorded on Monday evening. So mark your calendars. Shave your heads. But we'll be recording live on Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern, as opposed to Tuesday. Which means that the podcast will be released on Tuesday instead of Wednesday. How about that? We'll leave it at such for now. Thank you all very much for chiming in again. Happy Turkey Day to all the Americans, and I will see you next time.